Welcome to this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. On this week's episode, the guys talk about ways that you can use your home equity and ways you shouldn't, as well as how to stage your home and the hot real estate market going on in Colorado Springs right now, all while sipping on and reviewing Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Select Whiskey. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks, powered by Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective on YouTube, Fathom Realty, as well as Keller Williams Downtown. My name is Charlie Sardelli, and I'm here with
Jameson Amaros,
Oscar Barra,
and we are here at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, as always, our lovely sponsor down here in Greenwood Village, Colorado. And on today's episode, first off, guys, Happy New Year. We're back after the new
we
year.
We are back. We are back. You actually nailed the intro after being awesome.
I'm not going to lie to you.
I don't even know what I'm...
I don't even know what I'm doing my hair
Can't even
right
lie
now.
To you. When I started talking about the Living in Colorado line, my brain, I'm just in autopilot. I just felt it flow. I was like, let it go.
Just lock in. Lock in, baby.
Exactly. No,
it's funny. I was just thinking. I was like, man, he's really hitting it. I'm like, I don't even know what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to start mumbling.
I'll tell you what. I'm good at survival mode.
Yeah.
I'm good at just
compartmentalizing.
Going in. Yep. just put it in.
You know, guys, when you, public speakers were like, just picture everybody in their underwear. Charlie's like, just picture someone with a gun to your head.
Yeah,
survival mode. You'll make it happen.
Go for it. But yeah, guys, hope you had a phenomenal holiday season, whether you celebrated Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, whatever it may be. Hope you had a phenomenal New Year with some good bourbon. Because I know for me, I was up in New York, and it was an interesting time being around a bunch of Irish people in an Irish bar.
Yeah,
for New Year's.
With Irish whiskey?
I drank more
in
Guinness.
New York?
Oh, yeah. Guinness, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I drank more Guinness than I planned on, that's for sure.
I read somewhere, or maybe it was a meme, that Guinness is just the male version of an espresso martini.
I don't know, I'm like, my
uncle's here to say that.
I'm just saying, it's the male version of espresso martini. So if you like
Guinness. I'll tell you what, though, they did have some pretty good pours up there. They did. But guys, on today's episode, since this is the beginning of the year, obviously we talk about real estate, we drink bourbon, we review bourbon on the podcast, but what we want to do is kind of give you some things that you can start the year off with that'll help you moving through this market, mm-hmm. especially because 2025, going to be an interesting market, especially come the spring season. So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about three different topics, three different kind of articles that we found to kind of assist you as you move through the 2025 market. And the three topics that we're going to discuss are going to be two ways to use your home equity to help you, two ways to not use your home equity that will hurt you. The next one we're going to talk about is going to be one of the best markets in the country right now is actually in our backyard.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about that. And Jamo, remind me, what was the third one?
Third one we're going to talk about, if you're looking at selling your house, how can you sell it faster than 80% of the homes around you?
I like it. So, like I said, guys, not only do we, talk about real estate on here, bring you guys the information, but we drink bourbon. And I know on the last couple episodes, we've been going a little out of left field.
Ham, baby.
Right?
We've been going ham.
No, we've been not allowing them to not twist our arm to bring in good bourbon.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yes.
We're like, no, don't bring us. I kind of feel bad. We've had some bourbons that, you know, the general public may or may not be able to get. That's how specialized some of these bourbons were.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And so
we're bringing
today,
it back in, baby.
Exactly. And on that note, guys, the bourbon that we're going to be drinking on today's episode is going to be the Jack Daniel's Single
Goddamn
Barrel Select.
Red-blooded American whiskey, baby.
Where's Colin when we need
him? I know. He's going to be so mad.
I'm going to start talking to Southern Draw now.
Good old Tennessee.
Y'all come back now, you hear?
So there's a difference between yonder and – I was talking to one of my cousins – from the south, uh-huh. And it was like there's yonder, and then there's like distance,
distance, got
fucking words.
Yonder, oh, over the hill.
Yeah, yeah, it's like 20 feet, yep. Half mile, and it's like what?
It's just known.
Yeah, it's like fucking. You can deal with the lingo.
Well, it's kind of like if you're when I was in New York, you know, my uncle was like, oh, you're gonna go one block. I had to look at Alicia and go, okay, I need you to understand this is a New York City block, not like
yeah.
A,
well,
like
there's
a normal
the short
block.
Blocks, and then there's the long blocks,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like the avenues and the mm-hmm. streets, right?
Yeah. And that's a great little segue there, Oscar. The reason that we chose Jack Daniel's, this one specifically, is because when you walk into a bar, this is a lot of time going to be on the top shelf. This is where, mm-hmm. you know, if you're not at a place like the Rouge that does have a huge selection, this is going to what most people consider high end.
Yes.
Because it's single barrel select.
It has all the buzzwords.
Has all the buzzwords.
And the bottle's fancy.
Yes. Well, fun fact. So
it's actually not even fancy. It's just a Jack Daniels bottle. It just looks like it got squished in one of those hydraulic presses.
Well, fun fact about this bottle. This one, guys, is 94 proof. It is going to be a little bit lower than a lot of the single barrels that we have had. But Frank Sinatra Select, the reason that they took that out of the lineup was because it was competing too heavily with this bottle.
Interesting.
So the Sinatra Select was pulling sales away from this. So they said, all right, you know what? We're going to step back and push the single barrel.
So we got rid of Old Blue Eyes for this?
Yeah, so it better be good. That's what I'm saying.
I've had the Sinatra. Yeah. It's a different league.
It is a totally different league.
I think it's Jack Daniels' top.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. There's nothing better.
And that's what I mean. So many people were going for that.
I haven't had this in a while either.
Over this.
I'm going to grab my water, guys.
All right, yeah, go for it. I'm going to go ahead and pour this out. Yeah, that was a good pop.
That was a good pop. It's like a good high five, mm-hmm. you know? You got to cup it. That's not water. That's a fish tank. Good God.
Hey, Oscar's got the Denver Aquarium.
You're going to be hydrated as fuck, bro.
I'll put it down here. Jeez.
No, you can leave it up there. It's very large. It's girthy.
It's trying to be healthy, man.
That's the girthiest water bottle I've seen in a long time.
All right, so.
You got to put out the California fires with that thing.
Hey, do them up
too soon?
No, well, no, honestly, on that note, guys, if you are involved in that, please, please, please check out. We have an episode that we did, I think it was 2 years ago now, mm-hmm. talked all about FEMA, how to kind of reach out and get some help. So please refer back to that episode. And if we can help you answer any questions in any way, please reach out to us. We want to make sure that you get taken care of with everything going on.
Absolutely.
So with this barrel, with this bottle, like I said, this is kind of their signature. They do have a bunch of different flavors. They have like a rye. Mm-hmm. They have like a high wheat, stuff like that. But this is their kind of signature.
I mean, is that a flavor at this point?
What?
I mean, we're bourbon connoisseurs.
Is what a flavor?
Is it a flavor or is it just the mash bill?
It is the mash bill.
You know, do we call it a flavor? You know, I agree. Flavor, it's like kind of that.
Like a vanilla Coke versus a cherry Coke?
Or Crown Royal, right?
They do flavors. Like
peach and all this.
Yeah. Sour apples.
Yeah.
A different mash. No, that you're right. I like that's a good point.
Mash bill would be a flavor.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point. Especially because now there are flavored bourbons.
Yes.
So, no, I think that's a great distinction. All right, so just a little bit about it. Like I said, bottled at 94 proof. So the notes I'm going to go over after we get our noses in it. I poured it out. It's been sitting for just a couple minutes. But the whole point of this is it's supposed to have a robust character, and it's supposed to accentuate the flavors from the barrel. Again, guys, single barrel, cast strength, all that kind of stuff. Those are meant to be less of the focus on the mash bill, more on the quality of the wood in the barrel, and to get more of those sugars, those natural oak flavors. So I'm interested to see how this goes, especially because it is Jack Daniels, and we know that.
Well, and so Jack Daniels, it gets it's a hard rap.
Just
you know?
Say it.
It belongs in a shot.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
It's normally a brown. It's a brown bagger. It's a brown bagger.
It is.
It's a brown bagger.
I'm a fan.
It's a brown bagger.
Coke and ginger, you know, it's a mixed drink kind of. It's not a sipper.
Not only is it a brown bagger, if I saw you out and you ordered just a regular Jack Daniels neat, I'd want you to take that brown bag, put it over your head so that nobody could recognize you.
All right.
Like a Cleveland Browns fan.
That was harsh, man. I was thinking, if I see you out drinking a Jack Daniels by yourself,
or I've gone through some shit.
Yeah, no, that's what
I'm
saying.
What's going on, man? Let's sit and talk.
You look like you need a friend.
I'm gonna take that Jack Daniel bottle away from you. Maybe put in like some larceny. We're gonna sip it out. I'm just saying.
Sip it out. I like
but
that.
But it does get a harsh rap, mm-hmm. I think, because it has a sour mash.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it has a sour mash. It just hits you. It's kind of like your parting kind of.
And it's a very, very unique sour mash.
Like yes.
It's Jack Daniels.
We've had like Michter's sour mash.
Tennessee whiskey.
Right? And I love Michter's in mm-hmm. general. And Michter's sour mash is one of my favorite bourbons. This, like not this, but regular Jack Daniels. Mm-hmm. But again, they built an entire brand on it being a mixed drink.
And that's why I'm excited for this. The reason is like, I'm excited for this because this is them taking a step into that upper echelon where they're...
And they have a few.
Yeah.
Like Gentleman's Jack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Single
mm-hmm.
Select.
And I'll tell you what, to me, Gentleman's Jack is hot. It's extremely hot.
I agree.
Whenever I drink it, and it's more of that more of that, like a flat flavor. I'm excited for this.
Before I started getting into bourbons, I remember someone brought Gentleman's and Select. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, they should just stick to what they do.
Yeah.
You know, now I want to taste it with a more refined palate.
Exactly.
Because the two, like, top brands when it comes to, you think Jack Daniels, what's the other one? Jim Beam.
Mm-hmm.
You sip on Jim Beam, it's actually a sipper.
It's like Jack Jim and Four Roses.
But if you put... Let's say you got those three.
Yeah, but Four Roses.
And you can sip Jim too.
Yeah.
Jack Daniels just has that distinct sour mash. You'll know it's Jack.
Oh yeah. You on the nose.
You could be like a non-bourbon connoisseur.
Mm-hmm.
Put some Jack Daniels into Jim Beam and blind taste them. You're gonna know which Jack Daniels.
We need to do a blind taste video.
That'd see where we are with everyone.
Partner with them. Yeah. All right. So first off, I mean, I'm gonna go ahead and get my nose in it. But first off, on this bourbon. I love the congruency and the regularity that you see with single barrels or cask strengths, where they're a lot darker in color.
Yeah.
Because they haven't been filtered as much, so they pull more of that natural wood color, and it's a lot darker. I will tell you,
it's not a Jack Daniels nose. I mean, you can get a little bit, but it's not.
I'm getting so much like fruit, like plum, on the front. Again, I'm fearful that this is going to fall a little flat. I hope it opens, and I hope it's complex, but. Just on the nose, I'm getting a subtle caramel, subtle vanilla.
Caramel, vanilla,
and
definitely fruit heavy.
Apricot.
That fruit heavy is very forward. Not a lot of spice on the nose.
No, well, but again, it is.
I mean, it kind of lends itself almost to like a cucumbery, refreshing kind of smell.
It'll be interesting, too, because this is that barrel strength. It should be heavier on the oil, so it should be lighter on your tongue. So I'm interested to see.
Which is funny because when they say, it's barrel strength, we're thinking 100
gritty.
Plus.
Gritty, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's 94.
Yeah,
94.
I will tell you, this holiday season has taught me that this show has increased my tolerance for hot whiskey 100%. And bourbon. What was I pouring? I think it was Eagle Rare 10-year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I love Eagle Rare 10-year. Yeah. I think it's too pricey, but I think it's a great bourbon. And it's hot. It's 100 proof, right? Or 100 proof. And I was just pouring it neat for people like me.
Yep.
And I'm like, hey, man, you got to try this. And I'm sitting there sipping.
And they're burning.
And I'm looking over, dude, and people are just like.
I love it.
Look like they were getting punched in the stomach. Yep. I'm like, are you guys drinking something different than I'm drinking?
Yep. I'll tell you what.
And then I looked down. I was like, maybe it's a me problem.
Yeah, no, a testament to the old soul. Like just another testament. That was our highest rated.
Yeah. But
my two buddies that came up, last year I gave them the Dexter. And they were like, man, this is pretty hot. This year, straight sipping. And they were like, wow, this is great.
Yeah.
You know, and that to me, I was like, okay,
yeah,
that's a good bourbon. Like that right there, if people who don't normally drink high proof can drink it and get the flavor from it,
I'm sure that's what happens when people first try like black tar heroin for the first time.
You have to acquire a taste for that.
Acquire taste.
To get your palate. All right.
Hey, I'm going to go ahead. How was your black tar heroin?
I'm going to go ahead and get my sipping. Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers.
You got to get in there, Oscar.
Holiday poundage on.
One day we'll get a larger coffee table, make it a little bit more conducive.
Okay. Hold on.
Mess. I haven't done this podcast in a while.
All right. Hold on. Okay. All right. Hold on. Right off the bat.
Hold on. I haven't.
That silkiness, evident. Immediately on the tongue, the lightness on the palate is incredible. As far as the flavor goes, I don't know about
super caramel.
Yes,
caramel vanilla,
heavy
toffee.
Yes,
very,
but not. I don't know how to put. You know when we've had it in the past, and it was more of that like. It wasn't a sweetness, like a sugar sweet. It was more of like a flavor sweet. I don't know how to put that.
Yeah.
But this one is to me, it's more sugar sweet.
Yeah.
Right? I feel like I'm getting less of the natural flavors of the wood and more of the sugar in it.
Hmm. It's actually a pretty smooth.
Kind of like biting into a pound cake.
Yeah. It's wild. Mm. But again, it makes sense as to this being mainstream that it's going to be a little bit lighter on the palate, easier sipper, and sweeter. Because if this is, most bars have this, they need to be able to get, you know, people need to be able to drink this.
What is that?
The back end? Apple. You're talking about the back end? Almost like an apple skin?
Yeah, caramel apple. It's like caramely and then it, like a daffy apple.
It bitters out?
Bitters out. But You know, the cool thing, it hangs out.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't dissipate.
Mm-hmm.
It's like those, like, toffee candies. Oh, man, I wish I knew. Like, my grandma
those
used
Weathers,
to have them.
Werther's?
Yeah.
I like tell you Werther's. What, it definitely still has that sourness to it, though.
I only get it on the middle of my tongue.
Yeah, at the beginning.
Like, there's just the acidity, like that sour mash, but it's not a, it's less a flavor, more of a texture.
Yeah, exactly. Makes sense, yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, it's not a flavor of sour.
Very little spice coming through.
Which is good, because I don't think sour would play well with how sweet this
is. It's not, so it's more of a more of a bitter than a sour.
Yeah.
You know, it's a light sour bitter. Yeah, at towards the end, you're right, it does. I get it towards the end, now that we're talking about it.
But it's a texture. I don't think it's the actual, like,
it's not like, I'm it's not like when we drink sour. The port. It's not like when we drink port and it pulls that dryness from your tongue.
It's just,
that,
your tongue's going, there's something
it's
there.
It's tart.
Yes.
Yeah, it's tart.
But it's not a flavor, it's hard to explain.
It's really weird. I'm going to be honest with you. Just
anytime somebody says sour, you think like Sour Patch Kids or something like that. It's not that. It's just like a dryness.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like your tongue feels dry.
Yeah.
Hey, we got to understand. Who is this man's mentor?
Jim Beam?
Uncle Jesse? Nearest.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Uncle Nearest.
Why are they so different?
Yeah. I'm thinking.
This is more like a Jonathan Daniels.
Yeah.
Than a Jack.
It's lighter.
It is.
Than I really expected. Not only for the oils, just the
It is the very, like, very silky,
it's
though.
It's subtle.
It is
very
silky.
Subtle. It scares me for the open. I'm not going to lie to you. It scares me for this to open because I feel like we're going to lose a lot of what we're getting right up front.
I'm expecting it to.
Yeah.
Just because it's not. It is higher end, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like super high end.
But what they're trying to do is they're trying to find that niche.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
I mean, I'll tell you what, though.
Not bad.
But I mean, I think that for the average consumer, you're like, ooh.
Yeah.
This is a.
That's exactly my point.
It's a well recognized.
If I was not a regular bourbon drinker and I took somebody on a date or I went out and I went to a bar and I was like, hey.
Ooh, who are you dating?
I want to have.
Sardelli.
I want to have a.
You're a taken man.
No, I'm talking consumers.
Jesus.
Consumer. Excuse me. My lady loves bourbon, so I don't need to take nobody. But I'm talking like normal consumer. They take them out, or you're on a business meeting and you go in. It makes so much sense that this would be Jack Daniel's like high because they would take that sip and go, oh, I can handle this.
Yes.
And it still feels more regal. It still feels elevated rather than the regular Jack sour mash.
No, I agree.
You know,
it's a completely different drink.
Did you guys ever buy or eat grapples?
Uh-uh.
They're apples that they taste like
grapes.
Grapes or cotton candy.
Yeah,
and that's kind of like what I'm getting.
Okay.
It's like an artificially never had sweet type of thing?
No, like it wants to be natural, but it's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like.
Like your brain, I mean, guys, your brain says it should taste like something.
I just got to say, we're getting good at this shit.
I know.
Notes, subtle notes of caramel and spice with bright fruit notes and sweet aromatics for a Tennessee whiskey with a one-of-a-kind flavor. We're getting good at this shit.
Yeah.
I'm like,
I mean, Peyton Manning said what? 10,000 hours, right? we're at, I don't know.
79 bottles, 80 bottles?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's on the show.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're 140 hours just on the show.
Yeah. Love it.
We consume.
I love it.
All
right.
Have you guys, this is a total side note, but I just had it for the first time, and it's a great price point. Maybe we'll see if he's got it. I'm not normally a toasted barrel fan, right? I feel it's kind of a gimmick. Like Basil Hayden's toasted, meh. Elijah Craig toasted, better.
That's good.
But they have a toasted rye.
Who?
Now, Elijah Craig.
Oh.
That is for $50, dude.
Wow.
But that makes sense though. A rye
but
having
it's
more
such
bitter
a good
with the toasted.
Is what I'm saying. It was incredible.
That makes sense.
You guys get a chance to try it.
So let's go ahead and get into the contents for today's episode. And like I said. We're going to move in, and one thing that we want to start with, the article I want to start with is two ways to capitalize on your home equity. And for anybody who's listening that doesn't know, home equity is the amount of money that you have in your home that's basically profit if you want to think about it, right? Is you had your principal amount, you started at 450, you've paid it down to 400, and now your home has appreciated in value over the last 3 years, so now it's worth 475. That means you have 75,000 in quote-unquote equity in your home.
It's the difference between how much you own your home and what the value of your home is.
Yes.
That's your equity. And it's, and you know, we're obviously in the business, but I've received phone calls in the past from, you know, clients that they're savvy people asking me how can they get their equity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, where's my money?
You just, and, it's and, in your walls, bro.
Have
you
not right. seen and break and the walls. The first time I got that phone call, it kind of, it didn't make sense to me that they didn't know that you gotta lend against it. Mm-hmm. That's unless you sell your home.
Yes.
So sell your house, you get your equity, or you lend against it. Mm-hmm. And we'll segue into the first one is home equity line of credit.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of those just because they're good interest rates. And they give you good interest rates because there's collateral, which is your home. And in a sense, it's a second mortgage, but it's not, because you could pull a straight second mortgage. A HELOC comes with usually checks and a debit card, and you just pay on what you've borrowed on your money. So let's say that you do pull out $100,000. You don't pay anything until you start using it. So it sits there. Typically, a HELOC, you will get a 5-year draw. That means you can use it for the first 5 years, and a 15-year payback.
The 10-year draws are becoming more common and, too, and for that's for the HELOCs.
And that's probably a better bet. Like, I got a 5-year draw. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have got a longer. But if you use it all up, obviously you're just paying it back. But if you use it and pay it, it's just like,
it's a line of credit.
A line of credit.
Yeah. And that's
what it's it is. A home equity line of credit.
And it has great rates because it's backed by your house.
So here's why we're talking about this
line
thing.
Of credit.
Yeah.
And this is going to speak to the home buyers the homeowners that watch or listen to the show. But it also is why we think that owning is such a powerful thing. Whether or not you see it as owning a home as an asset or as an expense, the fact is, at the end of the day, you're paying down a principal while the asset that you're paying down is appreciating. So I'm going to ask you two gentlemen right now. We've done this. We did this a year ago, I want to say. What do you think the average in the U.S. amount of home equity is across the nation? What do you think the average person has in home equity?
$220,000.
I'll say $150,000.
$315,000.
That's fucking crazy.
$315,000. And that is assuming you can borrow up to 80% loan to value, which most lines of credit. Right?
Some will go 90, but it's
right. But that's, this is 80, saying you're going to still maintain 20%. $315,000 in home equity the average U.S. household has. If you total it all together, let's just throw out a number. What do you think the total amount of home equity in the United States is nationwide? Like total.
$2.8 billion.
Okay.
I don't know. $10
billion. Man, y'all are way off.
Low.
I'll give you a second opportunity.
$36 billion.
Okay.
Oh, we're low?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. $1 trillion, Bob.
$1 billion.
You're closer.
That's wild.
Dang.
I'll give you one more guess.
Wow.
$850 billion.
No, I said he was closer at $1
trillion. Oh.
Yeah.
So wait, I'm still below?
You're way below.
$1.5 trillion.
Okay.
$3.5 trillion.
Man, do you guys want to know?
Yeah.
Jeez.
$17.6 trillion.
That's incredible.
Insert the Mike Myers. $17.6 trillion.
Hey, let's all sell our house and pay back the national debt.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. That's what we do.
$17.6 trillion is what the home equity is. And part of that is because we have this lock-in effect, and we talked about it in a previous episode. There were so few home sales over the last 2 years because of where interest rates were. Those people that were locked in at 3, 4, 5% have been just sitting, and their homes have been appreciating ever since. Mm-hmm. So $17 trillion.
That's a lot of cash.
That's some cash money.
Okay, so
cash money.
With that being said, you guys, now you know what HELOCs are.
Yep.
Now you know what home equity is and how it's utilized. So there's two ways that this article outlines on how you can use a HELOC, your home equity, to benefit you. And the first one that they talk about is using your home equity to do much needed home repairs.
Mm-hmm.
So think about, updating cabinets, updating countertops, modernizing your home, really. Anything that you want to utilize it for, because again, most of the time when you put money into your home, you're going to get that back. What is it? Like at least 10%.
It depends, right? It depends on the project. Mm-hmm. If I finish a basement, it's usually like 61% ROI. If I refinish a kitchen, it's 45%. If I add a room, it's 102%. Mm-hmm. So you'll never get, like, for the most part, dollar for dollar on home renovations.
Mm-hmm.
The rule of thumb is if you're adding usable, livable square footage, that's going to give you the best return.
Yep.
And then you just, deferred maintenance projects are also going to give you a great return. Right?
Well, and in a place, go ahead.
Let me, before we move on, I think you tapped in something that's very important. Home maintenance. A lot of people buy a house and like, oh man, now it's been a pain in the ass. And you do get equity, and it's, you know, it's saved for savings. I mean, I think we've used that, took that from Art, but just you got to understand if you put this money back to your home, it's only going to maintain its value or improve its value on something that needs to happen anyway.
And guess what, guys? If you're living in Colorado, it's a great opportunity right now to do a square footage addition on your home, get more square footage, add a bathroom, add two bedrooms. And like that alone, being able to list with a higher number of bedrooms, just that gets you a higher list price and puts you in a different echelon around your neighbors and comparative markets.
What's the term? Functionality of the home.
Yep.
So if you have, you know, four bedrooms, one bath, now you have four people trying to shower at the same time, you add bathroom, functionality goes up, price point goes up.
Yep.
The other thing too that people don't realize is, you know, even though most home renovation projects aren't dollar for dollar, like, hey, if I spend $15,000 on my kitchen, I'm going to be able to get that $15,000 back. That's usually not how it works, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. However, if you can use a HELOC or home equity loan, right, and it's used for qualifying
home repairs
and improvements, you can write that off on your taxes.
Yep. Absolutely.
So if you guys are looking,
know how huge that is?
If you guys are looking for tax deductions for next year, and you've got this equity and you've wanted to improve your house, keep your receipts, right?
I have, make sure it's so permitted. Many Home Depot receipts. Yes,
but sir. You can actually write those off for your taxes in the following year. So yes, you may not get the ROI immediately if you turn around and sell the house, but you can improve your livable space and your quality of life in your home. And then you can turn around and you can use those same improvements that you got by using the equity that's already in your house to claim tax exemptions and deductions on your taxes.
When it comes to taxes, a lot of people are like, oh, I could write it off. And I'm the party pooper that's like, but I still got to spend the money.
Yeah.
I hate when people are like, oh, we could just write it. Let's go to Cancun. We could write it off. We could go just talk business. I still got to spend the goddamn money.
Yep.
This is one way where it hurts less to fix your home.
Because you can use it.
Because you're going to use it. It's going to benefit you, your quality of your furnace.
Just look at your basement. You're renovating your basement.
Yeah.
From a HELOC.
So, yeah, in my kitchen. And, I mean, I've made it to where I like it.
Well,
like,
not only that,
there's
but
now
I've been
a house, no house in my neighborhood or in Crystal Valley has my kitchen.
Well, not right, that's what I was going
to
say.
But I did it because I like to cook, but now I've improved it.
Yes.
So it didn't hurt as
And I've seen like the kitchen previously to what you did, right? That's an improvement if and when you decide to list your house. Like just the island alone and the countertops are going to get you a higher offer. And you can write that off. And you can enjoy it while you're still living there.
Great. And what I love about this too, and for me, I feel like I've been seeing a shift just from when I was in school and you know, coming into adult life and, you know, adulting, as it's called. I love that the second bit of this is not just, hey, home repairs or you can build this. So the second thing that it says, that two ways to capitalize on your home equity, is to consolidate high interest debt is the second way. And honestly, this is right here. I love the focus, and unfortunately, you know, obviously as things get tighter, you're going to see more articles come out that are geared towards how to save money, how to benefit. But the fact that, you know, they're talking about this and this is a public article that people can read, I think that's getting information out that most people wouldn't know.
Yep.
And go ahead, Oscar.
So I'm a big advocate of, yes, debt consolidation, but education, because you don't, let's say you have $15,000 in debt and you pull a HELOC. And obviously, you know, you pulled maybe $80,000. There's certain debt that's just going to haunt you forever, and it's just going to be there. It's money you've spent. Yes, pay it back. Don't rack that back up. But I think one of the biggest things that I always advise against is autos. People want to pull that and pay their
Hold on. We'll get there. You're too good, Oscar. You're jumping. We'll get there.
Damn it.
You're too good. All right. So and the reason that they talk about, what does it mean to consolidate high interest debt, right? So think about the fact that credit cards right now, the average interest rate, you're looking at 23% interest, right? But if you take out a HELOC, home equity line of credit, those interest rates are at 8%.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, do you recognize that? That's three times less of interest. And for anybody, like I said, you guys know my background. Like I was a hippie. I didn't really know the cost and money side of things. But you don't to understand what it is to go from 24% interest to 8% interest over a long period of time on a loan, you're going to save literal thousands of dollars. Tens of thousands. Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
In the mortgage world, they'll give you the till, the truth in lending.
Well, not only that, but so if you look at where, so the average credit card interest rate right now is what?
23%.
2013, it was 12.9%.
Yep.
So we're talking in 11 years, it's doubled. Like that is, when you talk about consolidating debt, that 10% interest swing is massive.
And so I want to just kind of highlight it because when we say consolidating debt, okay, and this is where Oscar was kind of going with the truck thing, and that's the second part of this. But what they're talking about is, let's say you have credit card debt that's sitting at 23% interest. What they're saying in consolidating debt, what that means, quote unquote, is you take out a HELOC at 8%, but you use that money that you got from your HELOC to pay off those other credit lines and or transfer, quote unquote. Now, instead of paying 23%, you're paying 8% on the same amount of money. But that will save you, again, tens of thousands and thousands of dollars over time with the money that you borrowed.
Look at it this way, because obviously the average consumer is thinking credit cards, thinking just money owed.
Yeah.
So think of it as just the money portion. There's nothing tied to it. A credit card, use the money. There's nothing tied. It's a line of credit. Nothing else is tied to it but an interest rate and what you're paying. Those are high interest rate cards and debt that you owe. There's nothing tied to it. And now I know why you're stopping me, because now what not to do is, you know, depreciating assets.
Exactly.
And that's what a vehicle is.
Let's give
but there's something tied to that, that liability, right? Over here, it's just credit cards. It's money. It's money moving. You want to work, let your money work for you, not work for your money, right? So you are eliminating money owed by lowering your interest rate. And that's how you kind of process that.
So a real life example, I have a client that had about $65,000 in credit card debt, right? And they were paying 22, 23%. They've owned the house for 4 years, so they pulled out $90,000 for a HELOC at 7.6 is what is the rate they got. They were paying on that credit card debt somewhere around $6,000 to $7,000 a month, right? To pay, and of that 23% interest rate, right? They took the HELOC out, they consolidated that debt, and their monthly payment on that same amount of debt at a lower interest rate is $1,200 a month, which means even including paying the HELOC back, they're saving around $4,000 a month, which is almost $50,000 a year.
That's incredible.
That they have freed up in expenses by just utilizing the home that they live in and the equity that they've built over the last 4 or 5 years.
And if you guys are in Colorado,
spreading out.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you guys are in Colorado or places like Texas, Florida, North Carolina, even these markets that have seen huge equity growth with investors coming in and buying. Again, we talk about it regularly. Between 2020 and 2023, Colorado homeowners saw anywhere between 30 to 40% increase in their home equity. Guys, Coloradans, if you owned a home before 2020, this is you. We're talking directly to you. If you you have a phenomenal opportunity here.
And if it's not making sense or not registering 100%, please call us.
Yes.
It's not something that you need to know and you should know. No, if you need clarification, differentiating, depreciating assets and just money owed, how to pull this money and how that works, please do. You're gonna have questions. This is again real life scenario that I got. I was trying to explain to a past client how the home equity works, and then she got carried away. She's like, oh well, maybe I could do this, maybe I could do that, and she's like, or maybe I could use my equity and then buy down my principal on my property. And I just stopped and I was like,
why?
Okay, what?
Why would you do that?
Okay, let's start again from the beginning, how this works. Because obviously I didn't explain myself correctly. Yeah. And I was like, you can't pull your equity to pay down your house because the equity's there. And it is. I was like, that's not how it works. Let's start all over. So
that's called money laundering.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So if it's not making sense or you have questions, we're not going to ridicule, because I did it. I was like, nope. I could have been like, what, crazy? No, I was like, oh my God. Now I'm thinking I need to reestablish myself and start all over. So she is understanding what I'm trying to explain, how to pull the equity and why you would use it. It boggled my mind that was you know, at first I was like, what the hell? But then I was like, oh, okay, this isn't common knowledge, nor, I mean, should it be? Yes, but you don't need to know this. So, you know, call us, call your local lender that you trust. Because if you don't trust, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, just pull it. Don't run onto it. Well, who cares? Fund your vacation. Yeah. You know, that's what we're going
to
talk about.
Exactly. And that's where I wanted to get into. So we can basically consolidate the last two things that you don't want to spend your money on into leisurely items and depreciating assets, right? So let's say you take out a home equity line of credit and you have a, you have $50,000 and you go, holy shit, this Jeep Grand Cherokee that I want to buy is $50,000. And you're telling me I have $50,000 I can pull from my house and I can pay for this car? Guys, it sounds good in our immediate satisfaction society that we live in.
It's a dopamine hit, baby.
Exactly. It's a dopamine hit. That's but what you have to think about. But what you have
that
to think about is,
woo, buddy.
Oh, no, you're taking, drinking Jack Daniels. You got to talk like this when we watch some NASCAR and we're going to buy an F-150. Woo!
You're talking about, you know, you're talking about taking that $50,000 and buying something that the second you drive it off the lot, it is worth less than the price that you paid for it. Mm-hmm. So that's what depreciating asset means. So think about, like I said, cars. I mean, certain motorcycles. I mean, think about right now I'm talking to the Zennials, the Gen Zs. Think about like shoes. If you have shoes that you want to buy, but you can't guarantee that those shoes are going to be sold for the same price, you're not going to make that investment, right? You're not going
to. You guys buy shoes to sell shoes?
Dude, sneakers, there's a whole, StockX. My little sister, when she was like 18, 19 years old, was making like $6,000 a month flipping shoes.
Jesus.
StockX.
My wife wants some Nike Dunk wedges.
Yeah. Yep.
I could sell for like $400.
Right.
Used.
But that's an example of a depreciating asset. So you never want to take your home equity line of credit.
Pretty much anything that's going to be tied to an object.
Yes.
That object's going to
either
appreciate or depreciate, but in the world of taxes in real life, it's going to be a depreciating asset.
Yes. Or you don't want to do one-off purchases that really don't add value. And guys, I'm a videographer. I'm a photographer. Don't get me wrong. I love capturing weddings and moments for people having, you know, I have a quinceañera that I'm going to shoot. That is phenomenal.
Quinceañera. I want to go.
I'm going to shoot those. But that is not something that you take and dump your home equity into, because although your memories are, you know, you're going to hold on to them, you don't want to take that $50,000.
You know what? Quinceañeras are forever. That's for your baby girl. You need to do that. Do it. Wedding.
Again, weigh your options.
We're not going to talk about how weird it is that in the Hispanic culture, a quinceañera signifies a young girl becoming a woman the age of what?
I've had this conversation with my wife. Like, do I have to have this conversation with you? My wife's like, so does that mean that she could sleep around? I was like, no. She's just becoming a woman. She's not going to go,
I love it. But
my wife's from Minnesota. I had to explain some shit. Quinceañeras, you know what? That's a heartfelt moment.
It is.
Wedding, you might have a couple weddings. But,
average wedding cost right now is $30,000.
Yep.
Like, and as somebody who's looking at and planning a wedding, it's expensive. Like,
you got to do fix and flip, Charlie. That's why I paid for mine.
Right? But the whole point of this is do not take that, your home equity, and put it into something that's going to depreciate or something that isn't going to add value to the home. Because you're basically just putting yourself in a further hole.
More debt.
If you're going to use your equity, use it to benefit you.
Well, and then, so a good example, so people refinance and pull money out, right? A cash out refi to pay for stuff. That's why home equity is a little bit better, because you have more control and it's less amount. And anyway, if you're going to, let's say you do pay off a depreciating asset. Now you took that car, truck, that you were paying, yet it's going to free up money now, but now you have now financed it for 15 years.
Exactly.
So you're going to spend more money in the long run. Mm-hmm. So does it make sense? I don't know. I don't know. Work the numbers, because it just might. But more likely than not, it's not going to make sense. And now you have amortized this 5-year loan into a 30-year loan, 15-year loan, depending on what your amortization are, if you refinance or if you do a home equity line of credit. So you're spending more money in the long run.
Yeah, and honestly, guys, if you have home equity, this all comes back to why real estate agents and people who are in the real estate industry always talk about real estate as an investment, as you want to own an asset, because it's one of the only things that you're going to purchase. And just by you existing and living, the value can go up. And once that value does go up, it's one of the only things, assets that you have, that you can then borrow from it to make that asset better and make you more money. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's really that mindset.
Unless you're buying like you know, Harley Davidsons exactly. that are worth a lot of money.
Yeah, like historic cars or anything like that. Yeah. Stuff like that. But again, you need that. You need that capital to go into it. You need 3.5% down to get an asset.
Would you take the equity from your home if you found a really good Lamborghini Countach from 1984?
Again, weigh it, right? If that benefit is there.
Abso-freaking. Yeah, do it. Because now that asset's an appreciating asset.
But again, guys,
it's the same principle as taking your home equity line of credit, using it as a down payment on a rental.
Boom.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Then use the income from the rental to then buy the luxury items that you want. Boom. Have your assets pay for your materialistic things.
Your life. Yeah, absolutely.
He's not just a pretty face.
All right. So let's go ahead and move into the second article topic that we want to talk about. And Jameson, let's go ahead, because we're going to save the market for the last one, right? So Jameson, go ahead and introduce this second article topic.
Yeah, so the second one is, you know, as people want to sell their homes, especially coming into the spring market, they obviously want to maximize the value. And there's ways to do that via staging, upgrades, updates, like things that can be costly in nature, right? And, you know, for example, I use a stager that for 8 weeks, $2,400, will stage 5 rooms, make it look incredible. But it's $2,400 that, you know, the seller may not want to spend. Even though if you stage your home, you sell on average, and this is according to Zillow, 80 to 90% faster than homes that are not staged.
So this is like, it's going to be a lower cost cheat code of how to make your house be a little more.
And I will tell you guys.
A little more attractive, if anything else. Which and will provide value.
And I'll tell you guys, my main client for the videography business is a custom home builder. Shout out A to Z Builders. And the things that I've seen their designers do with not only a small space, but just a simple rug, pillow, candle decoration, whatever it may be. Like, it's been incredible to learn how visually stimulated humans are when it comes to remodels, home purchases, home sales. And guys, again, don't forget that. When you put your home on the market, you have to play the marketing game. You have to understand that the better you make it look, the more that you make these buyers feel like they can live in this home and envision themselves living, you're going to make more money.
When we go out camping or we go out, you know, to the park or anything, Emily always makes fun of me because I make a perimeter. Mm-hmm. I either put on my canopy or something, but then it attracts everybody to where we are. Because if you're just sitting on a table, open air, it's just like, it's kind of awkward. But as soon as you establish a perimeter, it's more inviting.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that's kind of like where we're going to go with here with that rug. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people, a rug makes a difference because now you have a perimeter where you're supposed to sit and kind of
and not only
differentiates
that,
the other parts of where you are.
You want to talk about visually, right? If you have a rug and you properly size that rug, just the lines and the curvature of that rug in a room can make it appear larger.
Correct.
Like it there's just so many things. So in this article, this professional stager talks about how they use three simple items to elevate a space, which again, like we just said, brings more buyers, lets them envision the home a little more. So the first thing that they talk about is setting out flameless candles with a realistic flickering wick. And they said, a flameless glass candle can set the mood in your home while allowing you to live free of the stress of fire spreading.
And if you think that's funny, it works.
100%.
It does.
I do open houses. And what's the first thing you buy for an open house?
Cookies.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Before I buy the balloons and the signs and everything else, I go and buy some cookies, and we're going to bake cookies there. Yep. I don't buy, you buy cookie dough, and you bake them at your open house.
Yep.
Just the smell. You don't realize how many people walk in, they're like, well, oh my God, it smells absolutely fabulous in here. It smells like home.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and I'm going to set the scene for you guys. So listeners, viewers, close your eyes, okay? Now imagine you're driving through Colorado, you just got here, and you're about to move to the city. You're excited about it. It's a new place. You're driving through, and guess what? When you landed, it's snowing. And now you're driving through. You go on I-70. You get up. You get into the mountains. You get past Idaho Springs, and you see, wow, these trees are covered in snow. This really reminds me of a Christmas landscape. And then you pull up to the house, and the outside of the house is very well done. It's neat. There's fresh snowfall. There's some footsteps that lead up to the door in the home. You follow those footsteps up to the door. You open the door. And when you open the door, you're met with the smell of a burning fireplace, wood burning. You walk in, there's some warm lighting. And in that living room where that warm lighting is, there's a beautiful couch with a faux fur rug or blanket that's thrown over the top of it. There's a little place in the side of the room that has some bourbon set out on the table, some glasses. And then right there, there's the fireplace, and on the mantle there's a couple burning candles, and there's a 75-inch TV over the fireplace that's playing football. Does that excite you? Would you sit down in that room?
I'm gone.
Right?
I'm there. Let's go.
Right? And that's exactly how you have to think about it, because as somebody who does virtual staging, I don't go in and set it up, but I do set up rooms with, you know, like putting couches in rooms and stuff like that. You have to think about the experience for the buyer. And that's ultimately what this leads to. Things like this is when they walk in, if the buyer feels comfortable by something like a warm light from a candle flickering, guys, that changes the ambiance. That changes the experience. And as we all know, your brain is going to react to sights, sounds, and smells. And guess what? You just hit all three.
This is your personal living space. Mm-hmm. You want to walk in somewhere, you want to spend some time.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to want to spend some time here. Not, you don't want to walk in and be like, man, it's a wet back alley.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I mean,
yeah. I don't want to walk in and see a leather couch that's been scraped up by a dog and has a pee pad in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like nobody wants to see that.
Well, I think the Occam's razor of human beings being so sightly mm-hmm. driven, right? Sight driven is by and large, we kind of lack imagination. If it's not in front of our face, we have a hard time visualizing ourselves living in a space. Okay. So I'll give you another real life example. I'm selling a condo right down the street, actually. And the condo's 1,100 square feet. So it's not big. It's small, but it has vaulted ceilings.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, visually,
is a good size for a condo.
Makes it look bigger, right? But they had a living room. And in that living room, they had a large sectional couch. And the couch for them fits their lifestyle, very comfortable. It's got room for them to watch TV, plus their dog. If they have family over, a place to sit, so on and so forth, okay? But as a buyer, if I walk into that same space, my thought goes, wow, this is a small living room.
Mm-hmm.
So what did we have them do? We had them take the sectional and just remove a part of the sectional. Take it out of the house, put it in storage for showings, and then the part that is supposed to attach to the other part of the couch, mm-hmm. put a nice faux fur blanket on it, mm-hmm. throw pillow, whatever. And now that same living room looks three times as large.
And Jameson, I'm not going to let you
do. We didn't expand.
I'm not going to let you skip past this. I'm going to make sure that you say it. How many days was that listed?
Two.
It was on market for two days. Right.
And for the listeners and viewers, average days on market on the low end is about 40 to 60,
mm-hmm.
but we're looking more like 100.
And this was properties. A $520 a month HOA, which also normally steers people away. But
it's crazy.
What we did mm-hmm. was we went through, and I use an interior designer to do a staging consultation for every single listing. And she looks at the lens not only through a third party that doesn't live there every single day, but as a buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And she would do things like moving pictures from one wall to another wall to make the walls themselves look larger. Yep. Right?
So,
like little things like that, as a buyer, when they walk in, now they can visualize.
And guess
that's
what
this article is about.
If you're watching the video, if you haven't yet, subscribe to our YouTube channel because you can go on and check out exactly what Jameson is talking about. We did a full video walkthrough of that property, and you can see what it looks like mm-hmm. to have those vaulted ceilings with that larger living room with that couch in there.
And because I've done a few fix and flips in my career, I just walk through the property with that mindset already.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then when I have this sit down with my clients, I usually tell them we're going to, I don't know if this is a word, depersonalize your home.
Yeah.
We talk about declutter, depersonalize, and there's a third D. Declutter, depersonalize, and there's a third one.
Yeah.
Can we get unprofessional real quick?
Yeah, there's a little one.
But at the same time, I also tell them, look, it's harder when they have children, especially young children.
Sure.
Because it's their home. It's their personal space. I tell them, look, pretend you're renting this place now. So just keep it there. Keep it clean. And then I don't want any trace of you in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Pictured out the walls, all this. And then we're going to make sure that the rooms look larger. Because it's your personal space. You get comfortable. You know, you start doing things and, you know, for your personal taste.
Yep.
So that sectional couch thing, that's brilliant
mm-hmm.
because it could be a very big space.
You're trying to play with the mind.
If you have a big armoire, a china mm-hmm. cabinet, a big sectional couch, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, though, that, you know, maybe 10 by 15 room just got reduced to 5x5.
And no matter what I do with my lens, 10 millimeter, 13 millimeter,
doesn't matter. Works magic, just can't work miracles.
Well, it's think about it this good. Way, right? So let's mm-hmm. let's talk about some cheap ways you can do it. So, Oscar, if I were to go to Bed Bath & Beyond's bankrupt, bad example, Home Goods.
I heard you could still use their No.
If I go to Home Goods, how much does a set of bathroom towels cost me?
I haven't bought towels in a while, but I'm going to say, I mean, you could go to Amazon.
Not 35.
I mean, 20 bucks. 50 bucks. Yeah. Sure. 20 bucks. I got some embroidered, super fancy looking towels for my bathroom that have my insignia eye for my last name. I look bougie as shit.
Don't get me started on accent towels.
In my head, I'm trying to sell my house, and I got a 5-year-old daughter, right? Mm-hmm. And her towels are Pokemon, something else, something blue. They're all over the fucking place, right? But if I go to somewhere like a Home Goods or a TJ Maxx, and I spend 60 bucks on two sets of neutral colored, decent towels that we can still use, but then for showings, you walk into a bathroom and everything's congruent. You've got just the same color towels, different sizes. Mm-hmm. You've got a neutral bath curtain that doesn't have SpongeBob SquarePants on it.
Well, and right? to go to number two, you're touching on it. And that's why number two that they say is dropping a neutral rug to unify a space. And that's exactly what you're talking about
just
right now.
Just neutralize everything. But mm-hmm. my point is, it's not, people think it's expensive.
No,
it's
not. It doesn't have to be. I can get towels mm-hmm. for 60 bucks. I can get cable management for TVs and lamps and so on and so forth to hide cables for 30 bucks.
The less messy and clean, it's just,
exactly.
The more visually satisfying. Okay,
so think about it like this, guys.
Can I do a PSA real quick?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. PSA on hand towels. I visited some of my friends that are bachelors. Buy some hand towels. We just got done talking about they're cheap as hell. I don't want to dry my hands on your bath towel that God knows what you dry it on. Just buy some hand towels.
Yep.
I love it. It's courtesy. But no, guys,
anyway,
really,
back to the show.
What they're talking about here and what Jameson's talking about is dropping a neutral rug to unify the space. The purpose here, the quote that you want to say, it's focused on is unify a space.
Correct.
And what they mean by that is bringing it together, creating the image in that space that the human brain thinks should be there. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately what doing this is going to do when you stage at home is, think about it. If you walk into a house that looks like somebody lives there and it's all, you know, like Jameson was saying, there's Spider-Man stuff over here, there's princess stuff over here, your brain can't really put it together what it's going to look like when you live there. But if there's neutral colors, if everything is neat and tidy, the human brain can then create an image in their head. And that's exactly what this article is talking about, is helping you create that image.
Well, even on the flip side of that, so we're helping create your image or your liking.
Yep.
If you have mosh podge of stuff, it's now creating a negative image.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to hurt you.
Well,
so it's not that you're just creating a neutral canvas. So, you know, the potential or future buyer is going to come in and now put themselves living here. If you have a hodgepodge of stuff, then they're just like, this reminds me of this. This reminds me of that. And they're going to be bad, either memories or just bad feelings. Now you're hurting yourself.
Yeah. The goal of selling a house is to sell it for the most amount possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to do that is the law of supply and demand. If more people want to offer on that property, the higher the price is going to be. So the goal is to appeal to as many people as mm-hmm. possible, right?
Fish in a barrel.
If I keep the SpongeBob SquarePants and this, that, and the other in the kid's bathroom, and it's clear that a child lives there, you might turn off every single home buyer that doesn't want kids.
Well, mm-hmm. and
or
so
can't have kids.
Another real life example, yep. And just so you know that we don't just do this general public, this is our job, ourselves and our family members. I sold my mom's house, one of her old homes, and my mom has her own taste. So she came in and she put burgundy colored rug throughout the house.
Hell yeah.
Loved it. That was her jam, right? So when she hired me to sell her home,
you want to murder somebody?
The first
and cover it up? Absolutely.
You don't even have to cover it up, baby. You just do your thing and it's done. So when I did a consultation with my mom, the first thing I said was, were you going to hire someone to remove your carpet? And she was like, well, it's semi-new. Can we just clean it? I was like, nope. It has nothing to do with your cleanliness.
It's semi-new, but it's also fully ugly.
And realtors, like, if you're listening
you
to this,
have to get rid of it.
It's going
to
cost you more money for me to go in and digitally remove that rug and replace it than to just...
Well, dude, not only that, it's going to cost the seller and everything else more money.
No,
by not replacing
you,
it.
You know, the specific buyer that's going to have to come out and want to buy this house?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's get rid of that carpet. It's going to cost you. And I have, again, use us. What's your proposition value? I come with a plethora of vendors that'll wait till the end of closing to get paid.
Yep.
Get the damn carpet out. It's going to probably improve the value of your home. And it, all of a sudden, you went from maybe 10 people that like that burgundy carpet to, you know, the masses.
Yep.
Because all of a sudden, now I eliminated the one thing that made this house niche,
mm-hmm.
and then just everybody likes it now.
And the last one that they talk about, and guys, I'm saying this as somebody who's worked in tech, mm-hmm. as somebody who does listing photos and have walked into some pretty disastrous listings. The last one that they talk about is hiding eyesores like cords inside a cable management box. And guys, I'm going to tell you right now, one way to devalue a home immediately is to have that power strip that you got from your parents when you moved into your college dorm room that's yellowed and has been there since 93, sitting with five things plugged into it and a spider web of cable and cords going across your wall.
Yep.
You're going to devalue it immediately because let's talk social engineering wise. You get somebody that walks into a room and the cables are just sprawled out everywhere and they can't see the cleanliness. That just adds clutter. And in the human brain, clutter equals anxiety. Disgusting. Clutter equals anxiety.
Well, clutter also equals, to me, and this is how I try to explain to my clients as we're walking through, clutter equals, in a buyer's brain, deferred maintenance.
Yes.
Even if nothing mm-hmm. is wrong with the house, the precedent is set. And the buyer's going, well, if they don't care enough about this, why would they care about the HVAC, the AC, the roof, the plumbing, everything else?
I bet you go straight down to the furnace and check that filter.
They start making up in their own brain
mm-hmm.
what
could be wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. And that is, they may still offer, but guess what they're going to do? They're either going to offer, it's going to be lower,
mm-hmm.
or they're going to offer and they're going to go ham on the inspection because they're just assuming there's things wrong. Like, it's all human psychology. That's what it is. You're trying mm-hmm. to sell your product, which is your house, to somebody who's never walked in it before in their entire lives. And this article, and I think we can probably link it in the show,
yeah.
is all very, very inexpensive mm-hmm. things. Like, again, we'll go back to the condo I just put in a contract, right? After 2 days. I paid for my interior designer to come in, and we walked for an hour. It cost me, as an agent, because I cover that cost, $250. It cost my sellers $0 other than a little sweat equity to move some shit around and make sure everything's good to go. There's a checklist provided. They go boom, 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 boom. Okay, we're all done. First showing, one offer.
I was literally going to say, if you guys, please, guys, look at the listing, look at the video, but like, it's legit. I got excited to shoot it when I was in there.
And it wasn't anything that was just monumentally hard to do.
So we're going to put that to the test because I have the absolute same scenario coming up either this week or next.
Let's
so
do
we'll,
it.
We'll see it.
Yeah.
You'll see it. It's about, I think it's 1,000 square foot, 2-1 condo in Arvada. So
love
similar
it.
Cities.
Yep.
And the rug, the carpet needs stretching. Mm-hmm. And it's, you'll see it.
Yep.
We'll put it to test.
I love it. I love it.
I would love to be under contract in 2 days. So
yeah.
So far, I mean, Charlie and I were 7 days max.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get it, baby.
So
got it.
2 days.
Dude, 2 days.
We got something good going on.
We're doing good.
Or, and then, I'll be honest. Here's a completely different scenario. Andrew Wiley's house,
mm-hmm.
right? Not a disaster, but not well taken care of. Same thing.
We need to call Andrew Wiley and make sure that we have his permission.
Oh, dude, we sold his house at list.
Mm-hmm. With no concessions. But he's probably like, yes.
Yeah,
with no concessions.
I was going to say, you guys should go check out that review.
And we did this. We did the same thing where we brought somebody in.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a ton of money to fix everything. We took care of the main thing, which was the carpet. We got their carpet replaced for like $2,500. It probably saved him almost $30,000.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. By spending $2,500 just to replace the carpet.
Just to kind of wrap a bow on this, guys, what we're trying to say is there's way more psychology that goes into marketing and selling your
home. It's all psychology.
Yes.
Exactly.
I mean, let's call it.
And you don't need to do things like fully remodel your kitchen. What you should do is figure out how to make your kitchen look the best that it is,
mm-hmm.
as is. And
staging cheat codes and hacks.
Yep. Exactly. There's
plenty of them.
Exactly.
And another PSA, if your electronics are yellowing, you should probably replace them. Yeah, or throw them away. Just throw them away.
Yeah. Guys, any...
Or if you have a screen in your house that's wider than about 4 inches.
Yeah. If your TV weighs 200 pounds...
You have a box back TV.
You should probably throw it away.
Do you have a gateway computer? We need to talk about
it. I mean, back in the day, we used to have that TV that was furniture, and then you bought the new TV. I mean, the new TVs, you can't do that, but that's basically what you're doing.
Yeah.
Just throw it away, man.
Exactly. All right.
If it weighs more than 50 pounds... you should probably go buy a new one.
We got a lot of value for you guys in this first hour. And the last article that we want to touch on is pretty close to home.
It is. Pretty close to home. It's about 30 minutes away.
30 minutes away. We talked about this. We touched base on this. I think it was two episodes ago. We were talking about the real estate market for 2025. But as of right now, what market is a top market in the United States, guys?
According to the highway signs, if you drive down there, Colorado Springs.
Colorado Springs. And you know what? I've been spending quite a bit of time down there lately.
Yeah.
It is a cool city.
Dude, it really is.
A lot of restaurants. They have a lot of cool stuff. Outside of the fact, like, if you come to Colorado, if you don't know Colorado Springs, and if you do, you're probably military.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's a military town. The Olympics, they have Olympic training uh-huh. camp down there. So that's huge
Air Force
in
Academy.
Itself. Yep. They have the Air Force Academy. They have Pikes Peak, the Broadmoor. Garden of the Gods.
The North Pole.
Great. The North Pole. Yep. Yes, if you have children.
They have Cripple Creek with the ice castles.
Oh, you have, like, you have, what's that? We spend a lot of time there, too. The little town that's connected to it.
Manitou Springs.
Manitou Springs with the incline.
You go, well, not just the incline. Mm-hmm. They have seven different natural springs you yeah. drink out of. They're like, it's like alkaline.
Cave of the Winds.
I was going to say, be careful. It's high in magnesium.
Cave of the Winds.
a quick Cave of the Winds. Super awesome. You got to do that.
Yep.
They have some, I could go on and on. Colorado Springs is super awesome. Outside of the fact of all of that we just talked about, it's a growing city. There's
it
more
is.
Stuff to do in Colorado Springs than Denver.
So it's a growing city, and it is benefiting in 2025 because it had such a sharp uptick during the mm-hmm. pandemic where housing prices went ham.
Yep.
That now, last year and going into this year, houses in Colorado Springs, and this is for buyers, right? If you guys are looking for a place to live and you're flexible and where you want to live, the average days on market right now is about 63 days, which is 30% longer than last year. And it's about 20 days longer than anything you can find on average in the Denver metro area.
And those homes on average are only 25 years old.
Which means you can get a deal, whether mm-hmm. that's concessions, a break on the purchase price, more leniency during the inspection period.
Colorado Springs is where I did that transaction where my client bought the house for $100.
Yep. Well, and something.
And you know how I do. I get kind of crazy.
I want to give President-elect Trump some credit because I believe one of the biggest things that he did.
I got to pour for this one. Hold on.
One of the greatest things that he did. And then I believe fully helped the Colorado Springs market and the military members down there is Donald Trump took the cap away from the VA loan.
Yes.
Which, since he's done that, there is a positive correlation.
Yes.
Between the moment that happened
yep.
and the average home price in mm-hmm. Colorado Springs. So, like, guys, again, we talked about it, but I need to give the credit there because I feel like that was a catalyst that helped to explode the Colorado Springs market, especially because you have two separate three separate service. You have the Air Force, the Army, and is it the
you've got Cheyenne Mountain,
yep,
military base, Fort Carson, mm-hmm. Army military base, Peterson Air Force Base,
yep,
and then you've got the Air Force Academy.
Yeah, and so right there, you just the market there. If you are in the military, you have your VA loan. Please take a look at Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm.
It is a phenomenal opportunity, and you don't have to put anything down. Can I tell you how jealous I am? Like,
I'm working
like,
with two VA buyers
there was,
right now.
There was something recent, too, with VA that, I can't remember what just came up that's super freaking awesome, too.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. VA is just getting awesome.
Oh, yeah. As they should. They deserve it.
As a military, if you're mm-hmm. in the military and you don't own a home, give us a call.
We
can walk
yes.
you through it. I mean.
Or tune into our episode from last year.
And mm-hmm. we should get these people in. I have a person here locally yeah. that help veterans get into homes because they're good at what they do,
mm-hmm.
right? Whether they're engineering or just fighting on the front lines, that's all you should need to know. There is liaisons in the military that will help you
yes.
get all your information together mm-hmm. to get your VA benefits.
And so let's talk about
yeah. and
just
I'm
the
big on that.
The Springs, the biggest thing, right? We talk about why it is. But again, it was voted the Western U.S. city that is going to have the top housing market.
And
in
before
US for
and before you get into that, you know how I get kind of crazy with real estate.
Yeah,
I went from selling Wild County, Hugo, Colorado. I'm doing it in the Springs, baby. I was out in Yoder and Callahan.
Heck yeah.
I'll tell you what. This client, we went and looked at 30, 40-acre parcels,
mm-hmm.
wells, everything, decent homes,
38 oh,
yeah. acres. And it's down yep. the prairie. Give me price point.
I'm going to 280.
I'd say about 40 acres? About 500.
Starting at, we were 350 all the way, and the highest we were roughly
that's crazy.
Five, but average 450.
That's crazy.
38 acres with water, because they were all VAFHA. So at septic tank, wells, electric, everything tied in. So you're just moving yourself into 40
or
acres.
You go a little bit, you go
if you
farther
if you're from
west
the city
that,
when you go see 40 acres it is big.
It's huge.
Yeah, but a lot of land. But if you want, you know, your white picket fence, three bed, two bath, you can go to Peyton or you can go to Falcon, and your starting price point on brand new construction is $425,000.
City of South Colorado Springs.
Yep.
My client that bought for $100, it was a four bedroom, two bath, bi-level home on a quarter acre lot. We ended up at 335.
Right. So that being said, the average home price in Colorado Springs right now, 489. What is it in Denver?
580.
$1 million.
So you're talking about a $100,000 difference, but you're going to be in an economic hub. You're still going to be about 35 minutes away from Castle Rock, an hour away from Denver, 45 minutes away from Lone Tree. But
they got their own airport.
The city is big enough that, especially if you go like north of the Interquest, the Briargate area, North Colorado Springs, you've got golf courses, you've got movie theaters, you've got strip malls, you've got every amenity that you want in a large city.
But what Jameson is saying right now is, if you guys remember, we had Art, the real estate investor. As of right now, the Colorado Springs market is checking a lot of boxes for good real estate investment.
100%. Exactly. Because I've been spending a lot of time in Colorado Springs. The only thing they don't have is a big downtown.
Yep.
But they have a downtown.
But what I was...
They have great dining. You know, I'm a little bougie when it comes to dining. Mm-hmm. They have the Ford Amphitheater going in.
Have you been to the Alice in Wonderland restaurant?
I have not.
That one's sick. That's the speakeasy.
Yeah.
They have a ton of cool stuff. I am exploring Colorado Springs right now.
Yeah.
I won't go to Denver. I'm exploring Colorado Springs. I just hit this new chicken sandwich place, Daddy's Chicken or something like that. Oh, it was phenomenal. Fire.
Dude, I lived down there for 5 years. I love
And the way that I look at it too is if you guys,
I'm not surprised.
There's an article. There's a national article that just got put out that's saying, hey, this is a hot market. The only thing that's going to happen is this market, this hot market, is going to bring more people. More people equals better infrastructure. Better infrastructure equals better amenities. Mm-hmm. Better amenities equals more people. So right now, what this article is basically saying is, hey, guys, we got a sleeper cell here. And to Oscar's point, Jameson's point, I've only been here for 6 years, but in the last 10 years, how much has the Springs grown comparison?
Astronomically.
Right?
A lot.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely insane.
Yeah. And so it's
Castle Rock, how much has it grown?
Right?
I go down to Springs to go to X Golf.
Yeah.
Because it's the same distance from here to Lone Tree.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather go to the Springs because there's more stuff to do.
Especially since they just finished all that construction on the highway.
My kids love to swim. They're aqua babies.
Great Wolf Lodge.
I was there. Yeah. You stay overnight and you get free pass to their
Pool. Are you a guy that drinks Jack Daniel's single barrel?
you want to take yourself down to...
Guess what they got? They got down there something called Shields. Okay?
No.
Shields is the outdoor mecca of the South.
And they also got the Brass Pro. The Bass Pro Shop.
I love it.
I'm just saying, I think you can go in there and actually shoot the guns in the store. But no, so on a national level, let's talk about the three markets that are the hottest in 2025. One of them, to me, blows my fucking mind.
Yep,
100%. So Springs is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia Beach, Virginia, which I lived in for nine years.
I've never been, so.
First thought when I saw it, I was like, why?
Mm-hmm.
But average house price, $389. Military, again, insulation. Mm-hmm. The third one, though.
Yeah, this one.
That I've been
wild,
to.
Wild, Bray. Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach area. Okay? So I get the allure of Florida. Climate.
I live near the West Palm Beach area.
Here's what blows my mind, and I don't know where they're getting the stat. I'm going to kind of call bullshit. The median listing price in that area is $525,000.
But I think they get you with the Miami.
But you also got the snowbirds.
My family lives down in Florida, and they live in Punta Gorda. Punta Gorda now. And you know, you go to Punta Gorda, you go to Apollo Beach, and they're on the Gulf Coast side, and they have
that's
inlets.
Not Miami then.
Yeah, right. But it's Central Florida, So you go in the inlets, and you got like water in your backyard, and
I get that.
So, but they're Miami, only like $200,000, right? So that's Florida in a hole. It's kind of weird because you have like these $100,000, $200,000 areas that's pretty predominant. But then you go to Miami and you got multi-million dollar
dude,
homes.
But that's what I'm saying. This is saying
so
the
Fort Lauderdale,
price,
it's still higher end, and West Palm is really high end.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't know where they're getting the 525. I'm going to call bullshit on that.
I could see if you would like, I don't know if they got the stat and averaged like all households.
That's I think that we're
it's got
Florida. That's
because,
what I mean.
Because West Palm Beach is expensive as shit. It's like hoity-toity.
I mean, the
so
average
Miami.
The average
Miami
list
also
price
has
of a
some
canoe
hood.
In Miami is $525.
I'm a huge fan of CSI, Miami. Miami-Dade Police. I mean, there were some hoods in there. I'm just saying.
But that being said, so the overall theme, if you guys are looking and potentially moving out of Colorado or trying to say, hey, you know what, I can work remotely, where should I look? Right?
Springs, baby.
The South and West dominated the list with all 10 top markets in those regions. Mm-hmm. The majority are in Texas, Florida, and Virginia. With the most affordable market in the United States right now, as
so,
far
but
as up and coming and appreciation, is McAllen, Texas.
But Virginia Beach, $389, is that pretty accurate?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. I've never been. I've never been.
Yeah.
It's very rural.
It's not rural. It's just... I don't,
compared to some here,
it's like Lone Tree.
$389 for
but
Lone
you're
trees
about 15 minutes from the beach.
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically what it is. Mm-hmm. There's not like a epicenter. There's not a real downtown. You've got the boardwalk, which the boardwalk is cool, but it's not a. Miami.
That's kind of their version of a downtown. Is a
yes,
boardwalk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I would mm-hmm. say it's like Lone Tree, but put Lone Tree on a beach.
Yeah,
that's where it's at.
Shit,
I like
put
it.
Lone Tree on a beach is multi-million.
Whoa,
dollars.
smaller houses.
Yeah, way smaller.
All right, so
and
maybe,
but again,
maybe
look
not
at
Lone Tree, but
all I'm
South
saying
Aurora.
Is with everything we touched on with
Littleton.
This, if you're a military member, okay. you should be investing in real estate right now. Sorry,
yes.
but
you should
that you want if you get. I'm sorry, but you get paid to live. You get paid to be married. You get use it, guys. Please use it because you are in a much better position mm-hmm. than 95% of normal home buyers.
I'm
right
gonna now. Give you a tidbit. I don't care where you live. You have tons of equity in your home. Get a HELOC. Get 20% of a down payment. Let's start looking at McAllen, Texas, where mm-hmm. the 270 stats guy. What 20% of 270? Go buy you some rentals down
56.
There. Check out the rental market. See if you can invest in some real estate down there, because we'll talk in about a year when this 53. Number is doubled.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll thank me then.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. All right.
20% of 270.
Get 20% of 270.
How much?
20% of 270.
10% is 27,000, so 34? Or no, 44?
44?
Roughly. 46.
No, 54. 54,000.
Yeah.
And that's if you put 20% yeah. down. We can you could get in at 3.5%.
Well, no, I'm talking about investments.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
take $54,000 out of the equity of your home, you go buy a house in McAllen, Texas.
Yep.
And just even if it breaks even, just leave it alone. Because in 3 or 4 years, that 270 is now going to be 470. Mm-hmm. And now you have tons of equity.
Yep.
And now you have passive income.
Love it. Real estate, everybody. On that note, guys, phenomenal episode. A bunch of information getting thrown in, and we hope that you guys, you know, were able to follow it. If you have any questions or want us to expand on any of the topics that we talk about, please reach out to us. As always, we're more than happy to talk with you about anything that we discussed. If you have any questions, you want to learn a little bit more, please feel free to check out the channel, because we have over 70 episodes that are all donated to helping you learn and know more about real estate and how to capitalize on the real estate market.
Fun fact. I'm throwing a bunch of PSAs and fun facts today. Nikola Tesla lived in Colorado Springs.
He did.
Really?
Yeah. He did his entire experiment on
the
Tesla connectivity
coil.
Of
the Manhattan Project.
You know
that shit?
In the ground.
He did.
No shit.
Did you ever watch? This is such a side note. And Charlie's gonna say no, and I'm gonna make you go watch this fucking movie again. Very similar.
I'm
to
glad
Rain of
you
Fire.
At least you know now.
Very similar to Rain of Fire. Oh my! It's Hugh Jackman, and. The Prestige.
The Prestige.
Watch The Prestige.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Because, and the only reason I say that, he has a magic trick that is derived specifically from Nikola Tesla's experiment that he did in Colorado Springs, where he essentially put light bulbs in the ground and figured out a way to conduct electricity through the ground without wires and power all of the light bulbs in a field that were not connected to
here in the
other.
Springs. And if you can't find it online, I own the DVD.
All right, Prestige. Sounds good.
Great.
That interests
and
me.
I have a DVD player that I'll play.
Oh, it's Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's...
Hugh Jackman.
Dude, okay, I'm down with that.
And the fucking Batman's butler.
Oh. Oh, man.
Old guy.
Yeah.
I don't know his name.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Michael Caine.
Michael
Caine.
Okay.
Hugh Jackman. Christian Bale.
It's a cast. All right.
The Prestige. All right. Go, it's go
a good,
watch
it's
it.
A good
it
movie.
Is okay. fucking phenomenal.
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
All right. A little bit of Houdini, a little bit Nikola Tesla.
It's so
Tesla.
Good, dude.
On that
it's
note, so let's go ahead and move into the bourbon review.
No,
for
one rock take.
Oh, no, sorry. Jesus. You're right. See, you caught me. I did good on the intro, but hey. Moving. All right. That's so. What we're going to do now is move into our One Rock Takeaway for today's episode. And for our new listeners, One Rock Takeaway is basically our, what we try to be, concise final thoughts on the topic for today's episode. Either one of you guys want to take it?
I'll take it first.
Go for it.
If you don't mind.
Go for it.
There's tons of hacks and cheat codes. I know that's the trend. You don't have to spend thousands of dollars, maybe hundreds, or even $0 to make your house a lot more attractive and to add value to it. You don't have to spend. You don't have to break the bank. We have the knowledge to make it work. But you have to do it.
My one rock takeaway from today's episode would be planning is everything if you're planning on listing or buying a home. So with that being said, don't be the person that gets in a situation where you have to sell and now you're straggling and you know reaching around to find ways to sell for the proper value. Prepare. Always be thinking of what little things can I do or what maintenance and upkeep can I do to my home in order to sell it for the max value. So my one rock takeaway is prepare, whether it's preparing and looking at good markets that are up and coming, whether it's preparing and staging your home with candles or preparing and taking out a HELOC to redo your kitchen. Just always prepare when it comes to real estate.
All right. Mine is going to be on the heels of when we talk about how do you access the equity of your home. We talked about HELOCs, home equity line of credit. We talked about home equity loans, okay? Those two, fantastic. To Oscar's point, here's a PSA. If you have anybody approach you and ask if you have an interest in a home equity agreement or home equity share agreement, run for the hills. And the reason I say that is because if you take the average homeowner having $319,000 in equity, but you also bump that up against the amount of debt that's in the country, there are a lot of individuals and households that are at a financial cliff, right? And home equity agreements are hunting those individuals. And the way a home equity agreement works is they give you a lump sum payment to pay off debt, and they don't make you pay interest. They don't make you pay monthly payments. Nothing. And it sounds fantastic. You become burdened because the catch, right, is they tell you that they now own a share of your equity that you gain on the home. And the more equity you have, once you sell that home, the more you owe to these individuals.
And they have ways to make it legal for them
to
own it.
It is absolutely legal. It is a lien on the house. And I have seen it. Again, personal experience with a homeowner that had over $200,000 in equity in their house. They took out a home equity share agreement or a home equity.
Okay, I think this needs to be a full episode.
I totally get it. I'm just saying my point is, my takeaway is when you're researching how to access your equity, speak with a knowledgeable realtor, lender, financial advisor to make sure you are not getting taken advantage of. And the reason
companies.
I'm saying that is because I had a client that was taken advantage of to where his net sheet, after we sold the house, he had a home equity share agreement. Even though he had over $200,000 in equity, he walked away with $93 on this house after 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Just be careful. There's a lot of equity, but there's a lot of unsavory individuals that are trying to tap into that. Make sure that who you're working with has your best interest.
Reputable, because there's a few different ways that they do that. And I dealt with one, remember? And
yes.
I can only say, because I talked to the attorney general for a while, and it was ongoing, and most of my real estate colleagues were like, just leave it alone. You're not going to win. I'm fucking stubborn. Let's just put it that way. And I won. I am, as of right now, I'm the only agent, I don't know if the nation, but in Colorado for sure, that has gotten their client out of there. But I was talking to their legal team.
Mm-hmm.
So they had legal backing for my client's home. And my client did not pull that much money out.
Right.
It was $3,000.
Yeah. That's wild.
Which
three
I think
grand.
that could be a great segue to next
it was
episode.
A 40 yeah.
How to avoid
year,
pitfalls.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But hold
like
on. It was a 40 year listing agreement.
Right.
So there was a real estate agent involved.
Yes.
So that's when I said, if you do talk to a realtor, make sure they're on good stand.
So maybe that's what the one rock takeaway is. If you have money, regardless if it's physical, in an asset, in your home, there are always people that are looking to take advantage of that. So make sure you're doing due diligence so that you're not being taken advantage of.
I like it.
Back yourself with some good people.
Yep. I like it. All right. So let's go ahead and move into the bourbon review for today's episode. And on today's episode, we are drinking the Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Select, a bottle that if you go into bars regularly, you're going to see it on their top shelf. It's going to be very well known. Obviously, Jack Daniel's is one of the most well-known brands worldwide. So we wanted to bring it on just to kind of get away from the more unique and boutique bourbons and come into one that's a little more mainstream. I will start it off by saying that I understand why this is mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna say that.
Yep.
That's how I'm gonna start the bourbon review. And as you guys know, we give these bourbons a rock rating on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 being the best, 10 being the worst, because the more rocks you put in a bourbon, technically the worse that bourbon tends to be. So that's how we grade things. We have only had one bourbon that's peaked that one. Check that episode out. It's the Old Soul. But yeah, I want to hear what you
guys
think.
We're like a 1-2-5 or something.
Yeah,
like that, right? Yeah, it was a great bottle. Yeah. But again, we got to give homage, however you want to pronounce it, to Jack Daniel's. They're iconic.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Daniel's is one of the most recognized iconic whiskeys, whether you watch movies or you're...
We wouldn't have these boutique bourbons if it wasn't for Jack Daniel's staying in.
He's tread some grounds, right? So mm-hmm. we got to give him the respect, whether you like Jack or not. You know, they've done some shit. I have a number 7 Christmas ornament at home.
Yeah, nice.
Jack Daniel's. So nice. Whether you love them or not, they're still a staple here. They're a part of Americana.
Yeah.
You know, they are who they are. Do you want to go on with your rating? I have a rating already.
Go for it.
You know, I have to take into consideration.
I think Charlie wants to go last.
I have, you know, the consideration of who they are. This drink is very drinkable. It's a good bourbon. I know we're a little bit harsh on bourbons. It's commercialized, all that other stuff. Get all that nonsense out of the way. The juice is pretty. It's pretty good. I still think their flagship. Their flagship is just not great, but mm-hmm. it's well known. And you can make it great by mixing it, whatever you want to do. All the other stuff, I think, is fluff until you get to the Sinatra. This one is very drinkable for beginner bourbons. Go for it. They're not very expensive. You're going to get a decent juice inside of it. I rated it a 4.
Okay. I love how you... Okay.
I love the setup.
Well, now I got to fucking...
Damn it. Now I got to get a fucking tablet. Oscar, Jesus. If you guys are listening, Oscar...
And a 4 is not bad.
Oscar has now moved to giving a displayed rating on his iPad. I love it. I feel like now I got
to
get him.
Because now I'm going back to the episodes.
Yeah.
And seeing what I rated other bottles and when I'm tasting them by myself.
I love it. Wow, you're using the podcast to
I'm just saying,
follow back? That's amazing.
I'm just trying to refine my
That's
palate,
amazing.
Baby.
All right, so I will say at the beginning of the episode, I said that my fear for this was going to be it's going to lose its complexity. And it did. it absolutely
don't look at my
rating. It absolutely did.
But it was still drinkable.
It was drinkable.
Not bad.
It was, but again, you know,
if I rate something bad that it's not drinkable, it's going to be in the 8s, 9s.
Yeah. Well, and the reason I say it like that is the reason I started with it is I can see that this is a consumer bourbon. Like I know why they put this out. I know why they have this for the price point that it's at. I would spend the money on something else.
Absolutely.
And the complexity for it, it completely died out. I mean, just. On the nose, I'm getting just straight ethanol. I'm not really getting that sweetness. I'm getting a lot more of the sour as it's sat open. Like, I'm getting back to normal Jack Daniel's with the flavoring. It doesn't... And again, I know that most people are going to drink this. They're not going to sit with it open for an hour or whatever it may be. But it's a testament to the build of the bourbon itself, the actual juice. And for me, price point, if you're wanting... If you're taking somebody out... And you're wanting to not spend a lot on a pour, but come across as somebody who knows bourbon, who wants to drink a little bit higher of a bourbon, great way for you to go. If you're sitting with people who drink bourbon, do not give them this bottle and tell them that it's good bourbon. That's kind of where I'm going to sit. I think I'm going to lean, and only because it is Jack Daniel's, I'm going to hold them to a little bit higher of an echelon. I'm going to put this, with the price point being anywhere between $45 to $60, depending on where you get it.
Do you know what it is per pour?
I do not know what it is per pour.
Do you want to know what it is per pour?
What is it?
18.
Okay, yeah. Don't buy this for $18 a pour. I'm just going to tell you that now.
There's
I'm sorry.
Way more, there's better,
there's better stuff for that. But
if you're a Jack Daniels fan.
Yeah, if you're a Jack Daniels fan. So my rating, I'm going to sit at a solid 5.6.
Wow. Man, you beat it.
I did. I'm sorry.
I went down the route of.
You're being nice. No,
it's Jack Daniels. Nice. I got to give him some respect. It's Jack Daniels.
Like, I have 2 bottles of Sinatra Select sitting at home waiting to be opened.
Two bottles?
Yeah, that's
Jesus.
Right.
Jesus.
That's right. I got to waiting to open. But I just.
Chappelle's playing in the back of my head. I'm rich, bitch.
I'm sitting
they're
at that.
They're not cheap bottles, but they are delicious.
And I got them when they before.
They
so.
Are delicious. Mm-hmm. I am a big fan of.
My rock rating for this guy, awesome. 5.6.
I'm going to call this bourbon, for my NFL fans out there, the Zach Wilson of bourbons. And I say that because there was promise. Mm-hmm. And we saw it at the combine, and everybody fell in love with that initial experience of him throwing a dart 70 yards down the field. Then he started having sex with his girlfriend's wives or girlfriend's mothers and has been nothing ever since.
No smoke with the people out there that do that.
But. I'm just saying, bro. I'm just saying, like, I hate to say this. This is
so. Is this the Zion Williamson of?
Well, no, he's been playing well lately.
He's not too bad.
Yeah,
he's been still, playing. At least Zion's averaging 20 points a game. Zach Wilson hasn't
started. He was like praised over Josh. I mean, I was always like John Moran.
Totally get it. Whatever. My point is, this is going to be harsh.
Really? God, did I break this?
No, but here's the deal. Like, I feel like Jack Daniels needs to stay in their lane. And I don't think, right?
I just want to clip it.
Just do what you
I
do.
I
want to
clip
like,
that
I just,
and tag
I just think Jack
be what
Daniels.
You are in good at.
Yeah. I just think Jack Maybe. Daniels needs to stay in the lane. And that lane on the highway of bourbons is the right lane. Mm-hmm. Don't go in the left lane and do 65. Don't get in the HOV with one passenger. Just stay in the fucking right lane.
Mm-hmm. But okay? You would think with their resources, they have
I know, but that's
money.
What I'm saying.
You would think the product would be better.
That's part of why yes. I'm saying okay. Stay in your lane.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as harsh as Charlie, right? I'm going to go with a 5 with a meh.
Damn,
pace.
I went with.
Okay. But I agree. The bottom dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was, again, this is the Zach
and,
Wilson.
And maybe.
This is the Zach Wilson analogy, though. When I first tasted it, I was like, oh my God, caramel, apricot, plum, vanilla. Like a slight sour mash on the tongue. And I'm like, man, if this opens up, this could be surprisingly good.
Okay.
And then when I just took a sip now.
It was water.
It's all sour.
But
yeah,
it's still a little thicker.
I think it's thicker from a texture standpoint, but the flavor's gone, dude.
This is where my rating comes, right? I was
for 18 a pour, fuck no.
Okay. If you're going down that route, yes, absolutely. I agree 100%, 1000%. But I was going down the route of it's Jack Daniels. It
right.
was not going to be held to a high standard for me.
No, but they changed the bottle shape.
They put single barrel select on it. Yeah, when you put it on
like,
the top shelf and you put
yes.
single barrel.
And you're charging $18 a pour.
Wow, there's absolutely no burn to that. No, and it's very sweet.
It's sweet, but it's still it's
but that's
sour.
It. But
yeah.
then it does.
It's one dimensional.
Okay, so that one. All right. So take what we said, and then that does fizzle out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's where
exactly.
it dies. That's
exactly.
where this,
put it this
fails.
Way. Dexter at a bar is about $15 a pour.
So, okay, I've been to bars where they poured me $20 Blanton's too, which we don't like, but Blanton's is up there, right?
Is it?
But
fuck Blanton's.
No,
is
up
it?
There in where
yes.
people
We haven't
yes.
done Blanton's on the show, by the way.
Yeah, we probably
we don't
won't.
Want to.
want to.
yeah,
I'm sorry, Blanton's, but.
I kind of want to.
And I'm a Buffalo Trace fan, but whatever. I think a good bourbon. It doesn't matter what our palate is.
Mm-hmm.
A good designed bourbon could withhold. So, all right. Let me gather my thoughts. A good bourbon.
Hold on, I know where you're going with it. Let me. If we didn't have Heaven Hill grain to glass, if we didn't have that one, I probably would have rated this higher because we had that sit. For
Kool-Aid man.
We had that sit for an hour and a half, and it was just as complex.
So let me tell you.
In the first part.
What makes a good bourbon? Time.
Yes.
What keeps a good bourbon is can it withstand time open?
Mm-hmm.
So time made and time open. Mm-hmm. A good bourbon, it will sit there for a while, and you pick it up, and it's either going to be the same or better.
Yep. So what you're saying is time in the bourbon.
Ah, you fucker. say it. Go ahead. Put that shit on a t-shirt.
Beads. Beads time.
Timing the bourbon.
Wow.
Is what you're saying.
Wow. Full circle moment.
Wow.
Full circle moment.
I agree with you, though. I love it. You couldn't have set me up any better.
I mean, an aged bourbon's always going to be better. And then if you open a bourbon and you pour it, it's going to stay.
Yep. Exactly. So we got, and the good bourbons age well. They appreciate over time.
And when you open them, they stay.
It's almost as if bourbon and real estate have similarities to it. Wow. Hey, yo, welcome to Real Estate Served on the Rocks.
I was going to say, we should probably start a podcast talking about bourbon and real estate because they're very similar.
With that, guys, phenomenal episode. You know that you can reach us at any time. We all have our own personal socials that you can reach out to us. Oscar?
Oscar the Realtor, Oscar the Realtor CEO. And I should probably plug this towards the beginning. We're going to try to bring in the Children's Heart Foundation and get a charity event going here soon. The podcast is going to be involved. The Rouge is going to be involved. I would love for everybody to come and support. You know, it's a great cause. So hopefully we'll get more information out to you and see you here.
Love it. I love it. You can find me at That Lifting Agent or The Lifting Agent, or you can find the video production, beatthejeansproductions.com or at beatthejeansproductions on Instagram and Facebook.
The Colorado Real Estate Guy and Jameson Amaros everywhere else.
The guy.
And if you guys want to get in
the
touch
guy.
With us,
the fucking
our
guy.
Phones are on, open, email is open at all times. You can email us at resotr@themilehighperspective.com or give us a ring.
720-584-3361.
And to everybody who has been viewing the podcast on YouTube, guys, seriously, thank you.
Awesome.
These last 3 months have been incredible. The amount of reach and growth you guys are giving us, comments, likes, everything. Thank you so much. It's helped us. It's gotten us a wider reach so we can work with companies and work with distillers and stuff like that. So from the bottom of our hearts, thank you so much. We hope that you had a phenomenal holiday season and that your 2025 is off to a great start. We will be here for you this year, as always. We look forward to helping you and give you some great information.
And for all you newer bourbon people, send us some bottles you want us to try. We have been sought out by some distilleries now.
Yep.
We're kind of connoisseurs. So
we're getting there.
We'll give you some good. I mean, we've actually had some people in here that we wanted to just destroy that their bourbon was actually good and vice versa. So we'll tell you the truth. Let's keep drinking responsibly out there.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and really anywhere that you listen to podcasts. To see the video version, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective. And to stay up to date with all the events going on at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, visit their website, therougewinebar.com.